And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson. Great to be with you again today. Happy New Year, everybody, because the last time I was on the program, it was just before the New Year came in. Right after Christmas, but before the New Year. I'm glad to be back with you. I'm glad to be able to start the New Year off with you, and thank you all so much for watching and listening to my podcast. I know I'm not on with you daily on American Family Radio, but I'm thankful to God to be on with you on a weekly basis. And my program is posted every Wednesday. So something fresh for you. So be sure to share this with your friends, with your neighbors. By the way, if you want to hear more of what I'm doing, what I'm saying, what I'm talking about, what our organization is doing, you can pick me up on my YouTube channel, E.W. Jackson YouTube channel. You can pick me up at on my Facebook page, and there are several of them, but just go to Facebook at E.W. Jackson SR. And I've got a personal Facebook page, and I've got a fan page, that's what they used to call them anyway. I don't know what they call them today, but we've got Stan has a Facebook page, and so does our church. The Called Church has a Facebook page. So, and you can get to us at our website, standamerica.us, standamerica.us. So lots of ways you can connect with me throughout the week. And I'm podcasting live 4 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So you can catch me there as well. But most of all, make sure that you keep tuning in here at American Family Radio for my podcast and, for, of course, for our daily radio programming. We've got lots and lots to talk about, but let me just say, Happy New Year, and my prayer for you is that this is going to be the best year you've ever had in your life. Now, I assume you've had some good years, so that's a fairly tall order, but that's my prayer for you. That's my belief for you. That, in fact, I want to speak that over you and into you right now. Father, in the name of Jesus, I declare that the American Family Radio audience would experience the very best year of their lives in 2026. Folks, I've been saying 2026 is the year of the fix. God's going to fix some things this year. Maybe he'll fix the heart of a loved one who's been staying away from God and won't listen to you tell them they need the Lord. Maybe he'll fix a financial problem that's been dogging you. Maybe he'll fix a health problem that's been bothering you. Maybe he'll fix a relational problem, an estrangement that you really want to get healed. Maybe that is the thing in your life that God will fix. But I really believe that 2026 is the year of the fix. In fact, I'll say this to you folks. God said two things to me about this year. So 2026 is the year of the fix, and 2027 is the outpouring of heaven. You know, 6 is the number of man. That's why the Antichrist number will be 666, because he will consider himself, and others will consider him, to be triple any man that's ever lived. Of course, it'll be a lie, but you know, that's the thing. Amplification of his ego, of his manhood, of his persona, 666. 2026, 6 is the year of man. But you know what? Man is nothing without God. So the 6 needs to be fixed, right? The 6 needs to be fixed. God's got to step in and fix us. That's why we're born again. That's why we know and love the Lord, because we've been fixed. Our hearts are fixed. Our minds are made up. You know, there's an old song that used to go, he's a heart fixer and a mind regulator. And that's what God has done. Those of us who know and love him, he has fixed our hearts. He has set our hearts toward him. There's another song that says, "You won my affection, you captured my heart, and now I'm yours, completely yours forever." I love that. Praise God, because that's the truth. That's the truth. We belong to God. From the top of our heads to the soles of our feet, we belong to God. And I'm glad about it, aren't you? Yes, indeed. In fact, he has made us glad. And we can say of the Lord, "You are my strength, my shield, my fortress, my deliverer, my shelter, strong tower, my ever-present help in the time of need." As you can say, I kind of feel like preaching in here right now. But you know, there is something about talking about the Lord and talking about Jesus that just makes you happy down on the inside. Right? That's why I said, when I think of the goodness of Jesus and all that he's done for me, my soul cries out, "Hallelujah. Thank God for saving me." So I really believe 2026 is going to be a year of great things for you. And the 2027 is going to be an even greater year, because I really believe it's going to be a year of the miraculous, a year of breakthroughs, a year of deliverance, a year when God does some extraordinary things. Now, 2026, of course, we're coming to the 250th anniversary of our nation. And Lord knows we need some things fixed here and now. And mainly the hearts of our people need to be fixed. You know, I was talking to my staff at a staff meeting about the rise of AI, and we got into some discussions about, you know, first of all, you know, that we all need to make the most of this new technology, but on the other hand, we also need to be a little wary of it. We need to be looking at it with a skeptical eye, because the potential for abuse is massive, just massive, folks. But I was talking about the fact that, you know, given the rise of AI, given the capacity of human beings, because we are made in the image of and likeness of God to create, to invent, to develop. You know, it's like the Tower of Babel, when God said, because they were unified, they'd basically be able to do anything they set their hearts to do. And God had to confound their language so they couldn't unify and couldn't talk to each other, in order to suppress their aspiration to be God themselves. "We will build us a tower up to heaven." In other words, we'll be our own God. We'll make our own idol. We'll create a monument to ourselves. And you know what? To me, that's what AI potentially is. Another monument to humanity. You know, there's a passage in the book of Revelation that talks about the beast, the false prophet making the image of the beast speak. Well, wow, you know, now that we've got this technology where you can practically create people and have them in situations and saying and doing things that has nothing to do with them. It's not them at all, but you can create the image that makes it seem like it is them and convince people that it is them. Well, the Bible says Satan will come with what? All signs and lying wonders. Everything he does is a lie. Everything he does is rooted and grounded in falsehood and deception. But he convinces a lot of people with that. And I really believe God is not going to let that go but so far. He can't let it go but so far, because there's simply no telling what power human beings will amass to themselves if this technology is allowed to just run rampant, just run wild. Look at what we've got already, which is, and look, and I love the technology because it can be very productive. It can be very helpful. Man, I think our human productivity has increased tremendously as a result of this technology that we now have available to us. But it has a very, very dark side to it, doesn't it? Because it gives people access to things that no human being should be accessing, and it gives people access to people that they shouldn't have access to, like predators, access to children that they shouldn't have access to. So I really believe that You know, we're living in the last days. I'm not predicting a date or time or anything like that, because Jesus said no man knows the day or the hour. So I always say, I mean, it could be next year, it could be 10 years, it could be 50 years. I don't believe it's going to be 100 years, but, you know, ultimately that's all in God's hands. What we know is we're supposed to be ready. We're supposed to be ready. We're supposed to be waiting. We're supposed to be on the job when he comes. And I'm committed to doing just that. So my brothers and sisters in Christ, may this year be the very best you've ever had. May God just use you in tremendous ways. And may some of the things that maybe have been seemingly intractable in your life, that just don't seem to want to admit of a solution, may this be the year of the fix. May 2026 be the year of the fix. All right. Well, look, the biggest story in the news right now, which is what I want to deal with here, and I want to deal with it from a biblical point of view, but the biggest story in the news right now, of course, is the Trump administration's apprehending, arresting, and extraditing to the United States of America Nicolas Maduro's illegitimate president of Venezuela. He is now in an American prison, he and his wife. They have pled not guilty to the charges. They will await trial. And my prediction is that they will both be convicted and they will be sent away for a long, long time, because they've committed some egregious crimes against their own people, but against Americans as well. And now they're going to be held accountable for it. So let me just give you my assessment on this, and maybe I hope stimulate you to think about some things that perhaps you hadn't thought about before. First and foremost, I want to commend our military. What an extraordinary job. I mean, I've heard this word used more in this context, in this situation, than I've ever had it used, heard it used in any kind of military operation that we've ever executed. Flawless. We didn't lose not one American life, and not even one piece of American equipment. And we flew 150 airplanes into Venezuela. We landed in the middle of Caracas, which is a city of 5 million people. We breached the compound that Maduro was staying in and caught him before he could even get to his safe room, which apparently had an iron door that once he got behind it was going to be very difficult to penetrate. He never got there. Without a scratch, without a wound, we ended up apprehending him and bringing him back to American justice. A dear friend of mine, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, said to me that we would have arrested Osama bin Laden and brought him to justice in our country, but he drew down on those operators who were there to take him in. And they killed him, which is exactly what they should have done. Maduro's didn't. Apparently he was unarmed. He didn't try to fight. And so we apprehended him and brought him back peacefully. But to think 150 planes, numerous drones, all of the ground intelligence that they needed to have to be able to pull this off. I mean, I've heard people say they knew everything about Maduro down to what kind of underwear the man wore. I mean, they really, months and months and months of intelligence gathering and practicing and rehearsing what was going to have to be done, they got it done. And it is an amazing thing. I am so grateful to God and so proud of our military people, because they finally have a commander-in-chief, and they now have a secretary of war who understands what their true role is and is allowing them to fulfill that role. Their true role is not to get on television and dress up in drag queen outfits. Their role is not to be in training to teach how you relate to a homosexual and how you relate to a man who used to be a woman and all that nonsense. And their role is not to get into a room and say, well, if you're white, you got to diminish your whiteness and all that. You're an oppressor and all that. All that garbage now has been trashed, which is what garbage is supposed to, what garbage, where garbage is supposed to land, in the trash. It's all been trashed. And now we're focused on training, readiness, effectiveness, lethality. And that's exactly what our military should be focused on. So I salute our commander-in-chief. As a Marine Corps veteran, I salute the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth. God bless you and thank you for your service to our country. And I salute every one of those men and women in uniform, those who are part of this mission and those who are in serving in other places, in on other duty. I salute every single one of you. Thank you for your service to our great country. Now, the question has been raised. Well, the president doesn't have the constitutional authority to do what he did. Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Under Article 2, Sections 1 and 2, the president, first of all, is required. He is required to protect and defend the sovereignty of the United States of America, and he's required to faithfully execute the laws of our country. Maduro had broken those laws. Doesn't matter that he was the sovereign or claimed to be, because he really was an illegitimate president, because the true winner of the election was basically kicked out of the country or had to run for his life. Maduro was an illegitimate president. But nevertheless, he was president of the country. He was running the country. Doesn't matter. Not one hill of beans. Doesn't matter. He was in violation of American law. He was responsible for killing American citizens. And he had been indicted in an American court, and he had to be brought to justice. The only problem is most presidents would not have had the courage to carry it out. I mean, remember Barack Obama telling Hafez Assad, I believe it was in Syria, about a red line. If you use chemical weapons, that's a red line. You better not cross. Well, he crossed it. And Obama did nothing. Did nothing. Biden trying to get us out of Afghanistan puts us in a position where the Taliban killed 13 of our brave men and women in uniform and left many of our citizens there stranded, had people falling off the planes as they were trying to take off. It was, the whole thing was just a debacle. And many of you won't remember, and it takes my generation to remember, Jimmy Carter's Iranian rescue effort, which again turned out to be just, look, it takes courage and it takes competence. President Trump has both. And the two people I just named, and frankly, I dare say probably most of our presidents, lack both. I give George Bush second a little bit more credit, and George Bush one, I give credit because he actually fought in World War II, so you got to give him credit for courage. But as president, I don't know. I don't know. I think the kind of political courage it takes to make decisions that put people in harm's way for what you know is the good of the nation is a different kind of courage than fighting for yourself and your fellow troops in combat. President Trump has never faced that kind of situation, but the man is absolutely courageous, no matter what people say about him, how much people express their dislike of him, no matter what names they call him. The man is relentlessly in pursuit of the best interests of the United States of America, and he does not care what people say about it. And I'll tell you, it is a quality for which I have the utmost admiration. So thank God they got it done. He had the constitutional authority to do it. He did it. And you know, this idea that he's got to go to Congress and ask Congress to declare war, I mean, that wasn't a war. It was a police action in support of law enforcement. Law enforcement had to arrest Maduro. But they could not do that without the necessary backing of our military, because they weren't trying to arrest a man in a foreign country. So they backed up our law enforcement people, which is exactly what they should have done and exactly what the president had the right to order them to do in order to carry out a lawful indictment and arrest warrant. So, but, let me get this in now. I want to talk about it a little later as well, if I have a chance, but let me get it in now. But if the Republicans lose the House in this upcoming election, they're going to impeach the president again. President Trump, in fact, he gave a speech yesterday talking about that, and President Trump pointed out that he said, if they win the Congress, they're going to impeach me again. I think he's absolutely right. I don't think Hakeem Jeffries, even if he thinks it's not a good idea, I don't think he has the fortitude to say to his caucus, we're not doing that. That's a waste of time. It's counterproductive. Even though it is, because look, they've impeached him. They've indicted him. They prosecuted him. They've sued him. They've smeared him. They've slandered him. They've threatened him. They tried to take his money. They tried to take his freedom. I mean, you name it. And where has it landed him? Back in the White House. Right smack dab in the People's House, which is exactly where the Democrats didn't want him. But there he sits. I don't think any of them are rational enough or logical enough to realize it is counterproductive. And I think that if they have a chance, they're going to do it again. A bunch of ne'er-do-wells, a bunch of leftists, Marxists, socialists, sexually promiscuous, deviant people judging this president who, in my humble estimation, is doing a sterling job at pursuing the best interest, the safety, the security, the sovereignty, the economic well-being, and the military might of the American people. What more can we ask? I mean, look, I've said, I really do believe this. And I think I've read, as I've told you before, I've read every biography of every president except two. I've not read Barack Obama's biography, and I've not read Bill Clinton's biography because I just didn't think I could take it. It would be a miserable thing for me to do. So I haven't read those two. But I think every other one I've read, including the ultimately forgettable James Buchanan, who I used to think was the worst president in American history, but I really now believe that Joe Biden was the worst president in American history, and that Barack Obama and Jimmy Carter and James Buchanan, they kind of all fit in the same category. They're close. You'd have a hard time making the distinction. James Buchanan, I think, is as responsible for the Civil War as anybody, because he had 4 years before the Civil War in which to try to work out some negotiated agreement, but he was too busy being a dandy. You know, they say he was the first homosexual president, openly, you know, because he lived with a guy and, you know, they called him, he hung out with all guys. They called him dandies. He didn't date women. Yeah, he's just a mess. Just a mess. But I'll tell you what, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, they're all at the bottom together. And which one is the worst might boil down to nothing but a coin toss. At any rate, look, that little footnote I injected means that we cannot take this for granted, that the president will defy history and maintain control of the House. We've got to work toward it. We've got to work toward it. We've got to work toward it. Not take anything for granted. We cannot give them control of the House. We cannot allow that to happen. And look, if Christians actually get out and vote to perpetuate the policies of this president, he will once again make history and hold on to the House. And I don't think it's ever happened. I cannot think of an instance in which it's ever happened. If it is, it is an extraordinary rarity. But I haven't heard it talked about. I haven't researched it to see. But it is almost impossible from a historical perspective for a sitting president to win the House and the Senate in the midterm of his midway through his term. It just doesn't happen. Presidents always lose support, lose seats. For whatever reason, people think that the balance is better. But oh my goodness. When you're balancing it on the side of the devil, that can never be a good thing. And that's what turning over the House to the Democrats, or the Senate, for that matter. That's what that's doing. That's tipping the scales in behalf of Satan, because he's the one who's using them. Yeah, folks, that's not hyperbole. That's the reality. That's the truth. So the president's on strong constitutional grounds in Venezuela. I think it remains to be seen whether the president will ultimately find himself on strong political grounds in arresting Maduro in Venezuela. That remains to be seen. I hope he does. For me, it strengthens my support. I mean, I was already a major supporter of President Trump anyway, but it strengthens my support. It doesn't diminish it. Now, here's the other thing. I guess there's a vast number of people out there who are thinking only of their own self-interest, and they're going to be looking at one thing, at least the pundits tell us, the economy. And if the economy is not doing well, if the economy has people afraid, upset, if they're losing their homes or they're not able to pay their bills or whatever, we could have a problem. And the question people are raising is, can President Trump focus on the economy and on making sure that the American people are experiencing the benefits of the Trump economy? Or is he going to be distracted by Venezuela and end up spending a lot of his time and energy with that and neglect the economy and have the economy go into the dumper, or certainly evince no significant improvement? In which case, some people may turn to the Dems and say, you know what, let's give them a chance. That has never, ever, ever worked out for us. Ever. Ever. Because they have increasingly, since the time of JFK, they have increasingly become the party of Karl Marx. I mean, did you hear Mom Donnie say, we're going to reject the frigidity of rugged individualism and embrace the warmth of collectivism? Oh my goodness. That is enough to make you upchuck. I mean, really, it is such drivel. The frigidity of rugged individualism. Dumb, not you folks, but him. It is that rugged individualism that built this nation. I mean, are you kidding me? Yeah, he probably thinks DEI built the nation. DEI hasn't built anything. It's torn a lot of stuff down, but it hasn't built anything. So we cannot afford to give these people any more control and power than what they already have. And in fact, we need to be on a quest to remove from them whatever power they have and to completely separate them from it. And I'm talking about political terms. I'm talking about voting and talking about challenging the legitimacy of their actions. You know, okay, so I'm talking about the PR war. I'm never talking about violence. But we've got to stop these people. We got to stop them. Because we know they hate the country. So if they hate the country, they'll wreck it. they'll leave nothing but a pile of rubble for the rest of us, with themselves standing on top of it, I guess waving the communist flag. Yeah, it certainly does not portend even the possibility of Democrats taking over the House is an almost unthinkable thought. It is just that bad. It is so monstrous as to be almost unthinkable. I mean, Swalwell? Are you kidding me? And all the other bunch of misfits that are part of that party? No, thank you. Now, with that having been said, the president's on strong constitutional grounds. Whether he's on strong political grounds remains to be seen, but as far as I'm concerned, he's doing the right thing, and the American people will ultimately see the benefits of the economy. I believe that's coming. And I trust that President Trump will not allow himself, the man sleeps, I mean, he works 24 hours a day practically, the man will not allow himself to become distracted from making sure that the economy is working the way he wants it to work. Not because it's an election year, but because he genuinely cares about the well-being of the American people, and he wants the American people to be able to live in peace and prosperity. So, good deal, good operation. Now, let's talk about the aftermath. Because, of course, this is the thing that I think people will use most against him. Well, he doesn't have a right to go into a country or run that country. Because they asked him, well, what about the future? And the president said, well, we're going to run it for a while. Now, see, this is why if you really want to hate President Trump, you can always find something that he says and you hang your hat on that and you make that your little mantra. And, you know, those of us who understand him understand that when President Trump says run it, I really believe what he means is oversight. I don't think President Trump is interested in appointing their governor, appointing their senators, appointing. And I'm going to take control. I'm going to put these people in office for now. I don't think he's interested in doing that. I think what the president is saying is that he wants to make sure that all the progress that they have made is not lost or squandered by some new Marxist coming in. I'm talking about with regard to Venezuela, but by some new Marxist coming in and taking over. So the president says, we're going to run it for a while. I believe that that means the president is going to keep all those ne'er-do-wells out, get the country on stable economic footing, and then let that be the prelude to putting the country back on its political and cultural feelings so that people can begin to think about, okay, who are we going to vote for president? And what kind of government is this now going to be? And what it takes to have a peaceful and prosperous Venezuela. By the way, folks, by the way, I hope everybody realizes that by doing what President Trump did, he struck a major blow against China, Iran, and Russia having anything to do in our hemisphere. Because, as you know, Maduro was busy consorting with them. I think the Donroe Doctrine, they'll take off from the Monroe Doctrine, the Donroe Doctrine is the right one. No country can come into our hemisphere, the Western Hemisphere, and set up any kind of permanent arrangement, base, troops, ships, none of that. We will not allow it. The Western Hemisphere is policed by the United States of America, and we don't want people getting close to us who have ill intentions toward us. Now, China, Iran, Russia, you can take your little conspiracy, your little cohort, and go somewhere with it. You can go to China with it, you can go to Russia with it, you can go to Iran with it, but don't bring it here because you're not welcome. and we're not going to put up with it. President Trump is definitely not going to put up with it. So the question then becomes, what does it look like then over the next year, 2 years, 3 years? I don't think it'll take longer than 3 years, but I think it could take that long. And I think what President Trump is going to do is focus on the economic. You realize Venezuela has the largest crude deposits of any nation in the world? And these two-bit dictators, with their stupidity, have been unwilling to invest in the upkeep of those refineries and the upkeep of the drilling. And so all the equipment is antiquated, it's worn out, it's all of that stuff. They're going to be practically starting from scratch, at least in terms of having to gear up to start drilling for oil and gas again. Now, that's tragic, but that's where we are. I believe the president's equal to the task, and he'll get the job done. In the meantime, he's got to keep one eye focused on the economy and making sure that the American economy is being run well and that the American people feel that. Not just feel good about him, but feel good about what is happening economically. Because if the American people feel good about what's happening economically, I will say that the House will be maintained under the control of Republicans. I think it's just that stark. I think that's exactly what will happen if we get either prices under control or wages rise to the point where the present price structure is not economically oppressive to the average American. That's where we are, folks. We need to be praying for a breakthrough. Because look, this is ultimately not about Republican versus Democrat. It's not even about liberal versus conservative. It is about what is true versus what is false. It is about God versus the devil. It is about good versus evil, right versus wrong, the will of God versus wicked rebellion against God. That's what this whole battle is ultimately all about. And we know what Iran, China, and Russia represent, what side of the equation they're on. It's not the side of righteousness. It's not the side of blessing people. It's the side of self-aggrandizement 1,000%. What they want is whatever they want. That's what they want. Whatever we want, that's what we want. They don't care about the Iranian people. They don't care about the American people. And they don't care about, for that matter, any people. The Chinese people, the Russian people, any people. And these American leftist politicians don't care about you and me because we're simply cogs in the wheel. They care about, as I don't know whether it was, whether he said this at the Mamdani event, but they care about the I, me, and my. That's what they care about. How do I get what I want and need for me and mine? Period. And what happens to the rest of us? They could care less. I mean, you've seen what these folks are doing with the complicity of politicians in Minneapolis, in Minnesota. $9 billion, $9 billion with a B, to buy cars, to buy homes, to send drug money to the cartels. And who knows, maybe just an infinitesimal part of it gets shipped to a a loved one who is in desperate need. Maybe, maybe. But what is all this money that Maduro and all these cartels and all these people coming here and engaged in human trafficking and drug dealing and all of that stuff, who's benefiting from that? I guarantee it's not first and foremost their family. So we just have to pray that President Trump, while he's dealing with that problem in our hemisphere and dealing with some of our major adversaries in doing so, again, China, Russia, Cuba, but that he keeps one eye on this upcoming election so that when the polls close on the first Tuesday in November, we don't awaken to a situation in which Hakeem Jeffries has the speaker's gavel and what's his name up in New York is the majority leader. So Chuck Schumer, I don't know why I was drawing a blank about him, but Chuck Schumer. So folks, I said 2026 is the year of the fix. God's got to fix some things in people's hearts in order to get this right so we don't regress. And I'm believing God for it. Let me say one other thing before I go. Because, of course, I live in Virginia. And without some very, very serious intervention, I was talking to a former congresswoman from Virginia Beach, Thelma Drake. She was at my church on Sunday. As a matter of fact, she visits from time to time. She was at my church on Sunday. And she was talking about the upcoming elections and asking me whether I was interested in running for anything. And the answer is no, I'm not. I left my radio program at American Family Radio. And let me just say, folks, that was not an easy decision. That was a decision that I did in obedience to God because I loved doing that radio program. I loved it. I mean, every single minute of it, I loved it. And I'm grateful to God to be doing this podcast still on AFR. But I gave that up to be obedient to God and to run for President of the United States. I'm done. Unless the Lord taps me on the shoulder and says, hey, son, you're not done. I got something else I want you to do. I'm done. I'm done running. And I said to her, I said, I don't think I could win it in Virginia. I don't think Virginia, well, let's put it this way. Without a massive amount of money and infrastructure and organization, because I think the votes are there to win, but turning them out is going to be like pulling teeth, and you got to have a lot of money. I mean, for this upcoming year for Congress, right now, we ought to already have a painted van with already staffed with people who are going around the country and around the state of Virginia and inviting people like me and others to go and speak everywhere. Speak in these small communities, speak in these churches, go to these prayer meetings, go to these Republican meetings, go to, you name it, everywhere you can. Now, knocking on doors, talking to pastors and saying, we have got to turn our vote out. You had $1 million to do that between now and November, because that's probably what it would take. Because you're talking about spending a lot of time in hotel rooms. You're talking about hiring a lot of people. You'll get some people volunteering to help out, but you got a lot of people that, you know, you've got to compensate them. You got to pay for their expenses. They can't afford to do it, but they're needed. It's going to cost you $1 million to do something like that. Then you got to buy or rent this vehicle and have it painted with some kind of victory slogan for Virginia. I mean, it's going to take a real commitment by somebody who has the time, the energy, and the money to bring to bear on these elections. Now, I could make the time and I could give the energy. Thank God I'm very healthy and strong and able, and I don't have any problem carrying out my job and doing the things I need to do. However, every time I ever run for office, I ran because I really believed God had called me to do it. I didn't run out of ego. I didn't go, I think I'm great. No, believe me, I know better. I ran because I believed in my heart, this is what the Lord has called me to do. And I never won an election. I guess God was calling me to speak up, but not to be hemmed up by holding office where, you know, you can't say everything you want to say because people around you are saying, oh, no, you can't say that. You can't say that. You can't say that. Somebody ought to give Donald Trump that memo because I don't think he gets it. You know, he says pretty much anything that comes to his mind. At any rate, my point is, please pray for Virginia. This is the state of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry, James Madison. We're talking about the Monroe Doctrine? Where was Monroe from? Where was James Monroe from? Virginia. James Madison, father of the Constitution. Virginians. Please pray for Virginia that we don't have the state of George Washington become the state of Karl Marx. And then we have to replicate that, frankly, all over the country. And you know what? The money is out there, folks. The money is out there. The money is out there. We just have to find those Christians who have the money and persuade them, entreat them to be willing to spend it. Now, I know there aren't very many people out there with the kind of money that Jeff Bezos has, but like I said, Jeff Bezos gave Van Jones $100 million. $100 million. A staggering amount of money for a man who doesn't know his head from a hole in the wall. I mean, that man is just as lost as a duck in a hailstorm. He doesn't know which way he's going. He doesn't know which way is up and which way is down. I mean, he just is sad. We need Christians to step up and say, I'm not going to allow this country to go the way of Baal, if you will, to go the way of demonic influence, of Marxism, of socialism, of sexual deviancy. I'm going to invest my money in making sure that does not happen. When you're a billionaire, I mean, my goodness gracious, you can give away a ton of money without being affected, not in the least. I mean, can you imagine being able to give away $100 million, you don't even miss it? Well, he's not the only one who can do that kind of thing. And we know George Soros is doing it on their side. And we know there's some others who are putting significant finances into some far left craziness. But we need those whom God has endowed with great wealth to be willing to do the same, so that this country is not lost. This constitutional republic does not become an anarchic so-called democracy. That's because that's all you hear. We gotta save our democracy. What they really mean is we gotta save our little cabal of people who wanna control things and have figured out a way to do it. If we can just get that little pesky thing called the Constitution out of the way. Because we are a constitutional republic. So look, folks, we need to be praying for President Trump and his administration, praying for our country, obviously, that this whole Venezuela thing will not be a distraction from the very important elections we've got coming up here. And we've got to pray that the House and the Senate remain in Republican hands so that the agenda of President Trump is not so completely frustrated that it's as if he wasn't even in office the first 2 years. Now, that'll be hard for them to carry out, but I tell you what, if that trend continues and we were to lose the presidency 4 years from now, every executive order the president has passed could be undone. So we've got a challenge ahead of us. We've got a challenge ahead of us. I'm still believing God that 2026 is the year of the fix and that God's going to fix some things. But you know what he told Jehoshaphat? Set yourselves, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord. I say, he didn't tell him, go home and go to bed. He told him, set yourselves on the battlefield. Position yourselves. And then watch me work. We got to stay on the battlefield. We got to stay positioned. And then watch God work. He worked through worship. He worked through praise. He worked through the word of God. And he worked through their obedient actions. I pray that God will work in your life this year, in my life this year, and in all of our lives in the same way. As we worship, as we praise, as we stay in the word, as we obey God. That we're going to see magnificent displays of God's righteous power. Look, God bless each and every one of you. Again, my thanks, my gratitude, my respect, my honor goes out to our troops who put themselves on the line once again and proved that the American military is second to none. And some of the finest individuals on this earth are now serving us in uniform, serving us because they love this country and they care about the well-being of the American people and they're willing to lay their lives down for our liberty. Well, look, that's going to do it. I've got to go. But God bless each and every one of you. You know what to do in this brand new year. Don't change it because it remains the same. Stand up, step up, speak up, and refuse to back up. Because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit. Because we are on God's side. God bless everybody. And Happy New Year.